We are still breaking down the Ashley Benefield murder trial on segment number two now. Thank you for continuing to join us. We just heard some of the testimony from Ashley when she was being talked to with her own attorney on the stand on direct. And then Cross came to be with the state. And honest to God, this is some of the most bizarre, dramatic testimony I have ever seen in court. But even more so, like our friends and our defense attorneys that do this for a living, baffled by this. I watched some of the coverage on Defense Diaries, Bob Mata's podcast and his YouTube channel. Go subscribe over there. And he was in tears. And so were his co-hosts, because what you're about to hear is really shocking, just how much they pressed her on the stand. We're going to work our way through. It's about 17 minutes of coverage, and we'll take moments of pause to discuss. But this is right after, if you heard our first segment. If you're just listening to this one, go back to the first segment. You need that for context. Listen to that, then come back, because this is part two. Of it. And if you would, Stacey, on a note, label them part one and part two so people get it. Let's take a listen to the Cross on Ashley Benefield.
Like I said, sometimes he'd be a little rough, you know.
But other than that, he never was physically violent.
He didn't like punch holes in the walls or anything like that, no.
So when I asked you, has he been violent, you said, well, he didn't punch holes in the walls. Is that what you just said?
That's what I just said, yes, ma'am.
So punching a hole in a wall to you is a definition when I ask, was he violent? Your definition of that is punching a hole in a wall.
Oh. I think that is violent.
Can I pause that for a second right there?
Yes, please.
Because was there not testimony earlier that he was punching holes in the wall?
Yes, they've shown pictures of a hole in the wall that he punched.
So what the fuck is that?
Yeah, exactly.
This is where it gets murky, because I do believe a lot of her story, but I also think there has been elements here that have been exaggerated. I don't know. It's there's contradicting stories going on here to a certain extent. And that's where it gets a little weird.
But we've seen the hole that he punched.
Yeah.
So who did it?
I know.
You know, that's the thing we don't know. We don't know for sure who did it. Typically, if you punch a hole in the wall, your hand might be injured, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a delicate female's hand might be injured.
Well, the problem with it is it's already been testified to that he did, and now he didn't. So which is it?
Yeah.
And that's, again, look, it can be confusing being a victim of abuse. I get it. But we got to keep our fucking narrative straight here if you want to be taken seriously. And I do take her seriously. I do believe she's been a victim of abuse. But I also do think she's a victim of abuse who has a personality disorder.
It's quite possible.
As well. Where sometimes reality gets mixed in with fantasy. And that's how that works, depending on what is going on in one's mind. Does it negate or say that any of the abuse allegations against Doug are false? No, I don't think it does. We saw evidence from someone other than her that had abusive situations with Doug. And if that holds up to be completely true, then we see a pattern of behavior here. But you can't interject things that are not real into an already dramatic situation, because that hurts your credibility. And I do think she's done quite a bit of that in this case. Again, not saying that she was not abused. I do think she was. But when you interject more than what is really there, your credibility gets hurt. But I can understand, though, why maybe she needed to or felt that she needed to, because the system was not reacting to her many attempts to get help. She reached out to police when he was violating restraining orders. She reached, and there was always, no, we're not going to press charges. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. And at some point, I get it. If you'd have to be like, look, I'll say this if I have to protect myself and my child. If you're not going to listen to anything else, does it make it right? No. But does it make sense in the confines of this broken system that's not protecting people where they should? Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So let's keep listening.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Okay. So hang on just a second. So I want to get to the day that all of this happened. This happened on a Sunday, right?
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
And you're moving on, or you have a hearing on Wednesday.
I believe that's correct, yes,
and you're
ma'am.
Moving right after that.
I think the actual day of move was kind of in flux. It seemed like it changed 1,000 times.
You're all getting in the car together. Not together, but you're driving cars together to go to Maryland.
I believe he was going to be driving the U-Haul and pulling his truck. And I think that my mom was driving her car and I was driving mine.
And you were telling him during that time that you were going to move to Maryland and attempt to reconcile?
No, ma'am.
You weren't telling him that?
No, not in those words, no.
Did you hear Dr. Broder testify about that? That he said that when you were with Doug...
Objection here. Sustained.
So you're denying that you ever told Doug that you were wanting to reconcile with him?
I said I wanted to find a way that we could do things together as a family for Emerson's sake, you know? And that's why we started doing things differently. He wanted to move back in, you know, together, and I told him that I didn't want to do that. I didn't feel comfortable with that.
Did you say that in Dr. Broder's office? In front of Doug?
No, not in front of him.
So when you're with a safe person, a psychologist, you're not telling Doug this?
What? I'm sorry?
You're saying that you told Doug when it was just the two of you that you didn't want to move in together. And you felt safe telling him, I don't want to move in with you, right? Right.
Yes, we had that conversation many times, yes.
But you're in front of this psychologist who one would think is a safe environment with Doug sitting next to you. You hear Doug say to Dr. Broder, we are going to Maryland and we are going to try and reconcile. And you don't feel safe enough. Mr. Broder, no, that's not what I want to do.
I wouldn't want to make him look bad in front of somebody else.
Okay.
I wasn't going to disagree with him in front of anybody.
Which is an understandable point.
I'll tell you what, the shit you do in public.
Yeah.
When you are dealing with an abusive person.
Yeah.
If you do something that upsets them in public, nobody will see it.
Oh.
You fucking get home and you'll have hell to pay.
You get in that fucking car with them and you're afraid they're going to drive it up a fucking cliff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in that situation before.
Yep.
And it's like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yep.
No. And might I mention, just for context here, the prosecutor, which I think is a horrible prosecutor and is not doing a very good job of any of this, because actually I think she's helping Ashley's case far. Yeah. And if we're just to look at both sides, like the prosecution is supposed to, you know, it looked like help her make her look like she's guilty. They're not doing that. They're very much making her look a lot more. It's more understandable as to the context of where she's coming from. She looks like she had a makeover at Claire's like just before. She does. She looks like she went to Claire's and like, ooh, let's look. Let's. She's wearing a unicorn on her head. It wouldn't be that out of context for the way that she's made up. Anyway, continuing wow. on.
Okay. So the plan was to load up the truck, get everything done, and then move very shortly after the court hearing, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you had no intention of dropping that injunction, so you knew on the day of that hearing, he was going to know, right?
I'm sorry?
You knew that Doug was going to know that you had no intention of reconciling with him.
We had had the conversation many times. I think he understood where I was at.
Okay. You saw the text messages between you and him, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you agree that those text messages do not indicate that?
It doesn't say we're getting back together and moving in together.
It doesn't say we're not going to reconcile.
I mean, not specifically, no. I wasn't going to argue with him.
If you got your injunction on that day, September 30th, how would you have moved together?
Speculative.
I'll sustain.
What was your plan if that injunction was
speculative.
Granted?
Different question. Overruled.
Objection. Speculative.
No. You can approach.
So if the injunction were granted on that day, what was your plan about moving to Maryland with Doug?
I don't know that I really had a plan. I wasn't even sure whether or not I was going to go through the injunction at that point.
Okay, so I want to get to the night that all this happened. So you knew Doug was coming over.
Yes.
You invited him over.
Yes.
To help you move stuff in the house.
Well, specifically stuff in the garage, but yes.
Stuff in the garage to the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to your house a couple of times. He came and then left and then came back again.
Yeah, I believe he came twice that day.
And there is a gate to your community.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's at the gate, you had to let him in.
Sometimes, because he was frequent in and out, sometimes the gate remembers license plates and sometimes it opens and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes he would just follow people in. The gate kind of stays open for a while. Sorry.
But on this day, you weren't concerned about him coming over?
No, I knew he was coming.
Okay. And when he came over, your mother and Emerson went to the park?
I believe they were headed there. I'm not sure. I think they were down the driveway or on the sidewalk, something like that. They were on their way there.
You weren't so afraid that you wanted your mother to stay there and watch?
No, we were just packing to move.
Okay, so you weren't afraid?
I definitely didn't expect this to happen.
So it was up to you that your mother left?
Yeah, at that time.
Okay. So, if I heard you right during your direct, you said he bumped your shoulder twice. Body check, I don't know if that's what you called it. He walked into you with a box, right?
Yes.
And then at the end, you say he slapped you?
He hit me. I wouldn't know how to classify it. He struck me, he hit me.
Was his hand open or closed?
I don't remember.
Okay. And because of those things, you claim that you thought he was going to kill you.
He had never hit me before.
Okay.
I think that's key.
Yeah.
He had never hit me before. And can I just say for a moment, as horrible as all of this is, I called the box.
Yeah.
The first thing I said when we saw those evidence photos of the scratches on her side, I said, that looks like a box. It looks like she rubbed up against a box or something. And her allegation is that he like lifted a box and she was right there and it was basically kind of paper cut-ish on her side. But hey, I called the box. That doesn't really matter, but that is what that looked like. But I think we found a new context as to how it occurred based on her testimony.
You know, and I also want to point out too, if let's just say, you know, I feel like she's getting some facts screwed up a little bit. None of us were there. We don't know, but we've heard, like you said, some conflicting information. But if let's just say he has never hit her before, but he hit her now, she knows shit is really going to hit the fan.
Yes.
So that escalates that level of fear. Oh my God, he's never crossed this line before. Now he has. Now I'm really fearful.
Well, and she also knows what he's about to find out as well. She also knows that he's about to find out that she doesn't want to move and she's not going to move. And she already has plans with her attorney to go stay somewhere else. So she's extremely fearful of what the future is going to hold. And I think that plays a big role in all of this. Let's keep listening.
Okay. And you thought he was going to kill you.
He wouldn't let me leave. I tried to leave. He stopped me.
The question is, you thought he was going to kill you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you were in the bedroom, you decided to get your firearm. And it was where?
It was in a storage bin on top of the laundry basket.
Why the fuck do you have a firearm in a storage bin on top of a laundry basket when you have a fucking child walking around your house?
No, that's a whole other segment.
Can I just ask that, like, right away? Because, honestly, there are pieces of her testimony that I truly believe. Right now, I feel like she's kind of forcing it a little bit.
Possibly.
But it gets far worse, where I do not believe she's forcing it. Right now, I think it's, please believe this. And I do to a certain extent, but at the same point, it's like, okay, let's take a breath here and look at reality. But let's keep listening.
Okay. So I'm going to show you State's Exhibit 52. If you could turn around and look at that. Where was your firearm?
It was in the bin on top of the basket.
Here?
That's the basket.
The laundry basket. Where was the bin?
It's that right on top.
Okay. So it was in here?
Yes, ma'am.
Why would you have a firearm in there?
I had just emptied all the furniture and everything out of my room, and it was kind of like what was left from my drawers, and so it got put into a bin.
Okay. And that was not your only firearm in that room, correct?
Correct.
You had a firearm in the closet?
My carry gun was in my backpack, which is my purse at the time.
So in this room, with a mattress and a broom and a hamper, you had two firearms?
Yes.
So you go into the room and you grab your firearm. Is it in a holster?
I don't remember.
Okay. And you claim that Doug does what?
He came and slammed the door open. He was standing in the doorway. He said, "You're fucking done."
He said, "You're fucking done." And that made you fear for your life.
Yeah.
Can we turn the lights up, please? Thank you. So he says, "You're fucking done," and you point the gun and you shoot.
I held it out in front of me first so he could see it. And I said, "Stop."
Judge, if I could have her step down so she can demonstrate.
You may.
And this is where it gets fucking crazy. She has her go down into the front of the courtroom, their area. I don't know what you call it, but it's just kind of an open space. And this is where it gets really fucking extreme. Let's take a look.
If you could just come down.
Well, she's walking down right now to the...
So Doug opens the door and does what?
He's standing in the doorway, kind of like this. He said, "You're fucking done." And I hold the gun out in front of me and said, "Stop."
got into this like fighting pose where he like turned sideways and he was like moving around with his like arms and his hands and he started like inching forward towards me.
So why do you call it a fighting stance?
He looks like a fighter. Like a, I don't know, like a ninja or something, I don't know.
Okay, so he's standing there. He turns to like this and starts moving his arms around.
Like that.
Well, show me. What was he doing?
Kind of like, I don't know, he got like this. And he was like making like fighting motions. I don't know. I'm not a fighter. I don't know.
Well, she's kind of like moving her arms around trying to show what he was doing.
That was scary.
Did he have his hands in fists?
Not at that point. They were like, I don't know.
Her palms
was he coming at you like this?
And he lunged at me. He came very quickly.
Okay, so he lunged. Was his fist up when he lunged?
I don't remember.
So you start shooting, and he does what?
He kept coming at me.
Okay, so then you keep shooting again. And he falls down on his back?
His legs went up in the air.
Okay, where do his legs go?
In the air.
How high in the air?
I don't know.
Do they go over his head?
I don't know. It's like his feet slipped out.
Okay.
And his feet and his legs went up in the air.
And were you still shooting at the time?
I don't remember.
You can have a seat.
Yes.
So after this incident, you claim that you had swelling to your face, right?
It's going to take a minute. All right, move on, jury. Can you please close up your notes? Put them on your chairs. I'm going to ask you to step out for a minute. You can use the facilities. It's not quite our mid-afternoon break, but we'll treat it as such. Please don't discuss the case amongst yourselves. Don't discuss it with anybody outside the jury. Don't do any research like we've talked about.
I mean, she's like hysterically crying at this point.
Yeah.
That's the end of the segment of the audio.
Wow. It feels... What is the word I'm looking for? It just, I apologize for just pausing here. I'm a little stunned and I feel a little like, just listening to it.
Oh my God. I think we all did. I mean, this is the first time you've heard it and it's the first time I was just like, my reaction to Bob Mata on his thing on Defense Diaries was, what the fuck did we just watch?
Yeah. And honestly, I'm not seeing the video. I'm hearing her. This feels so uncaring to just sit there and watch her. Like, cause I'm assuming that's what they're doing. Just watching this woman have this horrific meltdown over something she experienced. And really it's the judge, right? Who steps in.
Eventually when she can't speak.
Yeah.
But it's like we're re-traumatizing a witness. I mean, the defendant here. I mean, whether you believe she did it or not. I mean, it's like this. It went far. It went too far, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to make of it because I mean, one can act, but I'm looking at this person and there's been several psychological evaluations and there's been psychologists who've looked at her and they all have said, this is a woman who's been experiencing an abusive relationship.
There's telltale signs. And today was very telling for me watching it. And I believe her and fuck you to the prosecutor. This is why women don't come forward.
Yeah.
This is why women who've been assaulted, whether it's sexual or physical or mentally assaulted, this is why you don't come forward, because the thought of having to sit on the stand and get shredded, it sounds worse than the actual abuse. Like, no, I'm not going to put myself through this. I'm just going to deal with the trauma myself and let it continue, because I'm not going to put myself through this one more time.
Well, she went through it personally, privately, and now it's on national fucking television. And here we are, people who don't know her will never know her, are talking about it to the fucking world.
Yep.
And that's, yeah, I get it. That's why you don't want to get into that situation. And it's a personal thing. And it's, yeah, why would you want to have to go that far? That's why
nobody wants to.
Nobody wants to talk. And then obviously then abusers keep going. And obviously the thought process is, well, if you can stop it from happening to somebody else, sure. But there's self-preservation as well. Not everybody's just suddenly going to go, I'm going to be a, you know, fucking spokesperson for this shit while I'm just trying to balance the rest of my crazy life that's going on. Whether you have kids and you're just... It's not something everyone wants to take on, and let me be the spokesperson for this. It's understandable.
Well, not everybody can.
No.
It's just painful. It's, you know, if anybody listening has been through this, it's hard to listen to it, but I think it's important. And I pray the jury does the right thing here, because personally, I believe her at this point. Before I didn't, but now that she's talking about this, now that she's opened up and we've seen some evidence that this guy had some issues, should he have died? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I feel like this was self-defense. Maybe he wasn't coming at her, but she didn't feel she had any other alternative.
When you keep fucking with somebody over and over and over, look at an animal. This is kind of what I've been making it, I've been talking about off the air. You consistently abuse a pet or something, and you go to pet it, and suddenly it like recoils in horror because you're just trying to pet the animal. It's because they've been abused.
It's the fight or flight response,
and they're going to respond.
They are, and it may not be rational.
Yeah,
maybe she shouldn't have done what she did, but at the moment, it was self-preservation. It was what she felt she had to do to survive.
Yeah. You can't.
And she's got the mothering instinct as well. In this point, she's got an infant.
Yeah,
she's scared for her life.
And she hadn't even brought it up to her pediatrician. Of the daughter came back, and the pediatrician said there might be abuse going on here. So she's really trying to do what she thinks is right. And if there's anything else going on too, add that to the equation. But yeah, you can't fault at the end of the day. We are all animals.
Yeah.
You cannot fault an animal who's been conditioned to abuse to react in either a recoiling way or an attacking way. If that's all they've experienced, or that's a good deal of what they've experienced from the conditioning of that other person. And at the end of the day, I think it's exactly what happened here. Was it justified? Was it called for in that moment in time from a third party, you know, Monday morning quarterback perspective? Probably not. But when you take into account the context and everything that she'd been through with him and everything that she'd learned about him, yeah, it was 100% justified.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.